From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump has been relentless in his attacks on immigrants from the very start of his candidacy for president and then during his presidential tenure. From the Muslim ban that he enacted right from the start, to continuous demands to build a border wall, heartbreaking family separations of thousands of undocumented children from their parents, record-breaking detentions, the decimation of refugee programs, the turning away of asylum seekers, and the cancellation of DACA. Trump has made very clear that immigrants are not welcome in his version of the United States. Now, under cover of the coronavirus pandemic, Trump launched his latest attack on legal immigration of U.S. citizens' family members, of the kind that his wife Melania used to bring her parents to the U.S. Trump also banned a large number of work visas, including H-1B and other types of visas that help Americans have access to foreign-born healthcare professionals, engineers, and more. My guest is Labani Hawk. She has her own law firm, the Law Office of Labani Hawk. She is a consulting attorney with Justice Action Center. Her expertise lies in immigrant rights, workers' rights, and government transparency. Welcome to the program, Labani.
Thank you for having me.
So first, let's talk about this latest ban before we put it into a broader context and also some recent Supreme Court rulings. Initially in April, Trump rolled out a 60-day ban on certain kinds of green cards, which are legal residency, when people apply for legal residency. And then just recently in June, when that expired, he extended the ban all the way to the end of this year and added a huge number of worker visas. This, to me, looks like, for people who have been paying attention, this is basically the outlines of a piece of legislation that Trump had been backing a year or so ago, the RAISE Act, which failed in Congress. It looks like he's basically using the COVID-19 crisis to push a bill that is a wish list of attacks on legal immigration.
Sonali, that's exactly how we see it as well. If you look at the outlines of the RAISE Act and the outline of what he has done, both with the original ban that he instituted in April 22nd, and now the extension of that with the add-on of the work-based visas, we basically have the RAISE Act by executive order.
This was part of Stephen Miller's wish list, right? This is Trump's immigration advisor, a man whose own family, his ancestors, benefited from U.S. immigration laws. His uncle is a writer and wrote about Stephen Miller's hypocrisy. But this, I understand, is basically part of Stephen Miller's wish list. Trump had come in saying that he only wanted U.S. citizens to be able to sponsor their children or their spouses and not siblings or family or parents.
Correct. And that's kind of exactly what you see with this executive order or proclamation, as they're calling it. We have for certain categories, including U.S. citizens, it's somewhat status quo, but for pretty much every other category, we've cut out parents and siblings on the family-based side, and all the preference categories are gone. Like you said, for the LPR groups, as well as the citizen groups, the family, the sisters and brothers and grandchildren in those categories are gone. And then obviously on the work-based side, not only the workers, but their spouses and their children are also gone, similar to what you see in the RAISE Act.
So this is a ban extended to the end of the year, including with it the ban on H-1B visas and other work visas. The Trump administration is claiming that it will be able to save over 500,000 jobs for Americans. How do you think that calculation was arrived at?
You know, I really don't know, because all of the expert evidence is to the contrary. The evidence out there from experts is that immigrants actually create jobs in the long term. And we will see, as these issues get litigated, as we are doing with the Justice Action Center, that we will certainly be requesting the administrative record in these cases to see what analysis they actually did. Because like I said, all of the expert evidence is to the contrary.
So these are the kinds of visas that doctors, nurses, engineers, tech workers, IT workers often get to come and work in the United States, the H-1B visa, the J-1, J-2, L-1, L-2. These are visas for workers that the Trump administration claims are taking away jobs from Americans. But that's a curious question, because if Americans were clamoring for these jobs, I'm wondering why U.S. corporations would bother sponsoring non-Americans for them, because it actually takes work, right, to apply for the visas. The employer has to go out of their way to recruit, to help with the paperwork, these workers. And if they had available American workers, it would probably be easier and cheaper for them to recruit them instead.
That's correct. They do have to go through a certification process to show that they actually looked for workers here domestically and are not able to readily obtain them. And
so already they have to prove that there are no American workers available.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, if this ban is going through the end of December, is Trump expecting a whole bunch of unemployed Americans to go to school, go into debt, earn their degrees at, you know, warp speed and join the workforce to fill these positions? I mean, it's just incredible for him to claim this.
It is incredible. And, you know, we haven't seen any responses to these questions, but, you know, we are planning to sue against this, and I think others will as well. And so they will be forced to be put into account. But, you know, by doing it by proclamation, they are short-circuiting even, you know, the legislative process, which was required through the RAISE Act and was defeated. And so, you know, they're basically getting desperate at this point, and they're, you know, trying to jam it through in their final days.
This is very obviously an election ploy, right? A campaign tactic. Trump wants to be able to say anything that he possibly can to his base that he is reducing immigration to the United States. It used to be undocumented immigrants were his prime target. Now he's made clear that even people using the legal processes that are already so difficult are his target. I mean, and at a time when the U.S. is desperate for healthcare workers, this also seems a little strange. We are seeing COVID-19 cases surge, but there's a pretty significant portion of doctors and nurses in the U.S. that are foreign-born workers.
That's correct. And, you know, I should say there is a carve out, but it's fairly narrow carve out in this ban to make an exception for medical professionals and researchers who are specifically focused on the COVID issue. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's very narrow for medical workers. It's for those who are involved in the hospitalization of people who have contracted COVID, not even just the general kind of general practice associated with caring for people who might have symptoms, or, you know, who are elderly and are you know, prone to getting COVID. It's not the broader holistic approach to medicine. It's really just a very, very narrow slice. Again, to really just try to get as many people, you know, kind of banned through this executive order as possible.
I understand that there's another carve-out, and that's for agricultural workers, seasonal migrant workers, farm workers. So the U.S. continues to rely on cheap migrant labor to keep the food supply to Americans running. I'm assuming that Trump thinks Americans are too good for these jobs, but these are the same workers that Trump has historically demonized and criminalized, but is quite happy to rely on them for keeping Americans fed.
Right. And, you know, I think that's as much Trump as the lobby among Republicans and, you know, the few allies that he has. That's been a very important issue for them. And so I'm sure that there was a back and forth tussle and those lobbying forces won out. But yes, you're correct that there is a pretty much blanket exemption for all the agricultural workers.
So the Congress is supposed to be where immigration policy is set. You know, when the Obama administration created the DACA program, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, Republicans screamed and shouted about this very issue, saying that you can't create immigration policy through executive order. It has to be coming from Congress. But of course, this was after the DREAM Act failed in Congress, and there was just absolutely no action on the part of Congress. There was just continuous gridlock, especially on the so-called Dreamers. So Obama, I suppose, felt that his hand was forced, created the DACA program. Now Trump is basically doing the same sort of thing that Republicans screamed and shouted that Obama was doing, right? Creating legislation through executive fiat.
Correct, correct.
So Congress can take action. There's also the Supreme Court with legal challenges like the one that you mentioned that are going to be launched. There's been a couple of recent Supreme Court decisions, a bit of a mixed bag. The Supreme Court recently came back on the issue of the DACA cancellation and said that the Trump administration was wrong, not wrong to cancel DACA, but wrong in the way in which they decided to cancel DACA. It sounded like sort of a technical ruling. What does that mean for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program right now?
Right. Well, I think first and foremost, it's a victory for all the Dreamers and their families who stood up against this naked attempt to strip away these protections that they were relying on really for years, and relied on to continue to be maintained absent some rational justification for taking it away. And that was the crux of what the Supreme Court said, which was, you know, if you want to take this away, you really have to take into account those reliance interests that all of these, you know, individuals were banking on. And, you know, these are children who, you know, have known no other country but the U.S. as their home, and who have built lives and careers and educations around what they were able to achieve through DACA and even before that. So that's, you know, first and foremost, what we get from that opinion is the resilience of these Dreamers. But secondly, yes, you're correct. This is not a permanent fix for documented individuals. The government can go back and try to provide some, you know, rationale and roll it out in a fashion that will supposedly, you know, address what the court has asked it to do or asked it to consider. But you know, we do think that, you know, we will fight it every step of the way. There are other challenges that will likely be brought if that happens. And, you know, hopefully those will prevail in the same way that this prevailed.
It seems as though Justice Sonia Sotomayor is one of the few people on the Supreme Court who really see the Trump administration's attacks on immigrants as one of, you know, as part of his racist agenda. And even though the Supreme Court decision benefited Dreamers, it was, as you said, sort of a temporary victory. They ruled against the Trump administration on technicality, and then just days later sided with the Trump administration on a particular deportation case that has a pretty strong bearing on asylum seekers now across the United States, that Trump administration has been trying to turn away asylum seekers in violation of existing U.S. law. This too, unfortunately, is a blow for, you know, the immigration policy in the U.S. broadly speaking, and it also shows that the Supreme Court is not necessarily the friend of immigrants in these matters.
Yes, that's, I think, with one hand they give and with another hand they take it away. So, you know, I think they're just basically keeping us on the edge of our seats in terms of where they go next. But, you know, we certainly can't just rely on the courts. You know, we have to get out there and lobby for proper legislation on these issues. We have to be out on the streets and demand justice. you know, as we've seen with the Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, it's going to take a multi-pronged approach.
Right. Protest works. Legal challenges work. Legislation is needed. On the issue of legislation, what can Congress do? I know that there's some legislation in the works. My representative, Judy Chu, has introduced a bill that something like 70 plus members of Congress have signed on to around reuniting families, I believe, to just strengthen the existing legislation. Are there other pieces of legislation in the works? And does Congress even have the appetite to take it up, as, you know, we're assaulted with these multiple issues one after the other? I mean, every day reading the news is terrifying, as the coronavirus crisis, police violence, attacks on immigrants.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say what Congress has the appetite to do right now, but certainly there's legislation that can be dusted off, the DREAM Act, other pieces of legislation in light of the DACA decision. Whether Congress has the political will to do so, I'm not sure. But we see that Congress has acted quickly with respect to addressing police violence, and you know, we're hoping that they kind of move forward to, you know, because the DREAM Act and DREAMers have been a very, very popular issue. The majority of Americans support it. This is the kind of issue that Congress should be stepping up to and rectifying through legislation. And so, again, I know we're living in a very saturated time with so many issues, but certainly this is one that they could pick up if they wanted to. There's time to do it. And you know, folks should reach out and lobby their congresspeople, you know, religiously all the time about these issues. But we'll see kind of what rises to the top in terms of bandwidth.
And the Trump administration is still targeting undocumented children as well. We've seen reports of huge numbers of undocumented children being deported as minors without their family members in violation of the U.S.'s own anti-trafficking laws. That is still an ongoing issue. It's just quite remarkable. One of the things that the Trump administration has tried to claim, and this goes back to the ban on green cards and certain kinds of green cards and work visas, is that this will, in addition to somehow, in some magical way, create more jobs for Americans, it's to protect Americans from coronavirus infections coming in from abroad. And this has been a part of the Trump administration's standard line on against immigrants, right, Labani, that they bring disease and crime, and supposedly they're also bringing in coronavirus. He stood recently in Arizona in front of the U.S. border wall, just the tiny piece of it that's been built, and saying, this stopped COVID, this stopped everything. But of course, today the U.S. is the source of coronavirus infections and may be facing a ban from Europe because the U.S. could be exporting coronavirus more so than importing them from other countries. That justification just doesn't stand.
Absolutely not. And, you know, this idea that they have any empathy for children, you know, is not borne out. For example, our initial challenge to this ban really focused on children. We were looking at children who were going to be aging out within the 60-day period of that original ban. And, you know, we challenged the government to address this issue of these, you know, minors aging out of ability to come in through a visa. And we got the back of the hand until we filed suit. And then as a result of that suit, they had to carve out children who are aging out in the span. But the idea that this is not something they're thinking about, not something they care about, is borne out by everything that we've seen.
So finally, what do you suggest people do, especially people who are directly impacted by this? And I should just say on the record, I'm impacted by this as a U.S. citizen. I'm trying to bring my elderly parents to the United States so they can spend the rest of their life with their daughter to take care of them. And I've been unable now. My application for my parents has been halted. I am not getting the same benefits that Melania Trump had in bringing her parents using family sponsorship, you know, that Trump denigrated as so-called chain migration. What can people who are directly impacted? You know, there might be people who have job offers in the U.S. that can't come in now.
Yeah, I want to say my heart goes out for all of you who are being directly impacted by this ban. It's terrible. you know, it certainly upends lives and plans. And we've heard so many stories of people coming forward, telling us about the medical issues either their family members have, which they want to help with, or people here who have medical issues who are bringing family members here to help them. And just all sorts of other humanitarian aspects of this ban. So I just want to say I really empathize with everyone. But, you know, I think these stories really have to get out. And, you know, I think that folks should continue to call their congresspeople and lodge their objection to, you know, all of the, you know, all of the negative harmful impacts of this new ban. You know, I do think that we just continue have to push through popular kind of uprising through any channels that we might have, through media, through demonstrations, et cetera, you know, really try to at least, you know, try to get Congress to move on the pieces of legislation that are sitting out there. You know, even if they may fail, I think just putting it out there and having it be part of our national discussion about what kind of a country do we want and who is going to be the right person to lead us forward through the next election, I think is really, really important, because these are the issues that are going to define us as a country going forward. And if you care about these issues, you need to figure out a way to make your voice heard.
Lobani, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate all the work that you do on behalf of immigrants.
Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Lobani Hawk. She is she's a lawyer with her own law office of Lobani Hawk. She's a consulting attorney with the Justice Action Center. Her expertise is in immigrant rights, workers' rights, and government transparency. We've been discussing Trump's latest attack on immigrants. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.